Greetings from K9 to Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum. End of message.
Faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 171 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
And I'm Mark.
And we join you flat out with exhaustion from having on Sunday the 2nd of October attended, all three of us this time, Terence Dix, A Celebration, at the Riverside Studios in Hammersmith, London. And it was quite a belting day, wasn't it, chaps?
God, we both drew breath first.
Yeah, I heard both taking it. Certainly take a breath to go. Who's going to go?
Go on, Mark.
You Sly?
Yeah, go on.
Go on, Mark.
Well, it was a belting day, although it started off with me turning up slightly later than you two to the Riverside Studios due to various transport problems.
How surprised we were.
Yeah, for a change. And when I got there, I found that my place at the table had already been taken by a listener to the show, Jolly Dad, who'd come down from Shropshire, yeah. I believe. Yes, yeah. So it was really nice to see him. We've spoken a lot to him, haven't we? Had one of our more chatty listeners on social media and stuff. So, yeah, it was really nice to catch up with him. Lovely chap.
Unfortunately, Mark walked up to the table just as we were starting negotiations with Johnny to take Mark's place on the podcast, so we've got quite a few listeners, actually, didn't we?
A couple of listeners and some fellow podcasters as well.
Yes, we bumped into Richard from Something Who I did try and seek him down later on in the event, because we only spoke to him very briefly after,
yeah.
I think it was the first or second panel, and I never saw him again after.
No, me neither.
Richard, apologies if that was too sudden and brief. We'll hopefully meet up some other time and have a good chat then.
Who else did we see? Oh, we saw Cy Hart.
Oh, Cy Hart. Who we're going to hear from a little bit later, actually, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
Of course, it was like Blue Peter now, doesn't it?
Oh, we'll never be that polished.
Later on, Doc's going to jump out of a hot air balloon. Mark's going to show us how to do some gardening with Percy Thrower. And I'm going to be speaking to Cy Hart.
Yeah, who else did we see? Was there any other podcast people there?
There were others there, but we didn't speak to them. We didn't, because the Maximum Power podcast was there, because Simon is part of there, and he said he was met up with all of them. Maximum Power, of course, being the Blake 7 podcast, so...
Ah, okay.
Yeah, right.
And also, although he didn't attend the event officially, friend of the podcast, long-time listener, from the oldie times, before me and Hayden, there was a friend of the podcast, Tarek Latif, as well, who came along. He'd been enjoying himself in some of the bars before he arrived at the Riverside Studios. And after the event, I hung out with him for a while, and talk about that later.
I have to say, I was a little trepidatious about going.
Mm-hmm.
For a number of reasons. So I suppose the main one, I guess, is it was the first time I would have been attending a fan event in 4 years, I think it was. So that's a lot of time that's gone. And the Dwaffs were always the ones that I used to attend as well. So that, and Riverside Studios is where the Dwaffs used to hold a lot of their events before it was closed in the mid-10s. And now it's been completely renovated, and I'm thinking, well, I've been here before, but this looks nothing like it used to. And when we got there, it was good to sit down during the first panel being The editors, wasn't it? It was Gary Russell, Nigel Robinson, Peter Darvill Evans.
Yep.
And it was good to sort of acclimatise back into it, but I said to you chaps at the end of the first one, because I wanted to get out and stretch my legs a bit, I thought, I'll start going and box popping people, seeing if there's anyone who wants to talk to us.
I'm the one!
As you know, it wasn't, but that was less to do with the reputation of the Diddly Dum podcast and more to do with the fact that everybody was still in the cinema, which is where all the talks are being held.
Mm. Yeah.
I got out there and it was me and Alistair Pearson and Paul.
The draft coordinator himself, Paul, as my will so mote it be, Winter.
That's the one. He was out there, so I got to chat with him a little bit, but there was absolutely nobody, none of the punters at all.
Yes, I think it was reasonable to assume that, given that the second panel was called Media Studies, I think we ourselves thought, so that'll be a good opportunity to get out and use that time to record interviews, won't it?
Mm.
And it turned out to be a really good panel.
Yes, it was. Media Studies was a panel with Mark Hearn, David J. Howe, and Michael Stevens on it, wasn't it?
Mm.
Mark Hearn, most of our listeners will know, is the editor of Doctor Who magazine. David J. Howe is the writer of several books, the guy who runs Telos Publishing.
He wrote the Target book as well.
And also there was Michael Stevens there, who was the...
guy who's in charge of the BBC audiobooks.
Yes, that's it. But actually, it was a really good panel as well. I mean, the thing that was lovely about it was, because obviously it's all based on Terence Dick, so there was a very... The day had a proper form and pattern to it, really.
Mm.
It was really interesting listening to them and listening to their tales about meeting Terence Dick. So I particularly enjoyed, I think it was David J. Howe, who said the first time he met Terence was when he and his friend, who were living in a borough of London at the time, just thought on the off chance they'd look through the London phone book for Terence Dick's phone number. And they found it. And I couldn't believe it. I can't believe somebody as famous as Terence Dick has just got his name, just sat there in the phone book. They phoned it up. It was him. And he agreed to meet them. And so they went round to speak to him. And they said to him, why on earth do you have your... Why isn't your number X directory, you know, private? Why have you got it in the public phone book? And he said, well, you never know when somebody's going to ring you up for work, do you?
That's very Terence.
Which is, yeah, I thought that was a lovely anecdote. And there was lots of things like that, wasn't it? So,
I'd have first been said, I never thought anyone was going to be as dicky enough to actually want to come round.
Yeah. It was lovely, and just hearing their quotes of Terence and their little stories about him and working with him were great, really.
Yeah, and then after that, I think that was when I joined the queue for the signing. So we had Gary Russell.
No, we had another panel before that.
Did we?
Yes. I don't know, some bloke called Stephen Moffat. I don't know who he is.
Oh, Stefan. No, it's actually, yeah, it was. It's the German guy, isn't it? Stefan Moffat.
He might have been tolerable on his own, but being interviewed by another Scotsman was...
Yeah, the previous two interviews were done by a guy, I can't remember his name, Ashley. Ashley was very good. And the interviewer who came on to interview Stephen Moffat was Robert Dick, who's done loads of Mythmakers interviews. He's a very seasoned person, I think. He's done loads of stuff at various conventions.
He's very old.
No, that's... I'm not saying that. I think he... When the two interviewers were trying to divvy up who's interviewing who, I think there was a bit of a tug of war over who was going to get to interview Stephen Moffat. But in the end, it was decided purely by the fact that Robert Dick had known Stephen Moffat for 25 years. So he got the job. Because I don't know if you saw Stephen Moffat walking around, but I thought he seemed quite shy and a bit wary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He came down on stage. And he was obviously at ease with Robert. And he was funny and urbane and charismatic, joking, and came across as the sort of guy who'd just stand at the bar and chat and entertain people.
Sort of like my average day on a podcast, really.
Yes, exactly. But then He really wasn't like that, was he, when he came, when he wasn't on the stage? So he was very different and, yeah, much quieter, more modest and shy, I thought. But he did stay the whole day as well, which I thought was great, considering nobody's getting paid.
Absolutely.
And he could have just done his panel and left. I mean, one of the great things about this event was getting to see him be interviewed and just watching him chatting, and he's very funny. He's the only one of the most recent showrunners who turned up because, as he pointed out, he's the only one who was available.
It was one of the best panels I've ever seen.
Yes, it was.
Because Rob Dick is a great interviewer, a really, really good interviewer. And not just that, but I think maybe it did help that Stephen knew him because, like you said, he is quite shy. But he was coming out with a lot of things that I just found myself nodding my head along to. I felt like a radical in the audience of Question Time. I just found myself nodding over and over again because he was bringing up stuff like Terroristics invents the character of the Fourth Doctor and everything's there in that episode of Robot, because he went home and watched Robot after he heard that Terroristics had passed away. And he says as well, you know, the War Games was where the show should have ended, or was very definitely supposed to have ended there.
Yeah, because the question of Doctor Who is answered at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really insightful. It was really interesting as well how I noticed his mode of language when he spoke about the programme as when he was on it. It's very much in the past for him now. I mean, I know, I think in the week he gave a Radio Times interview saying that he said, no, it's too recent for me. I'm not writing for that show again. And he said it again on stage. He said he had so much fun writing the Target novelisation of The Day of the Doctor because he said, well, this is the last Doctor Who I'm ever going to do, so I'm just going to have fun with it, which I found really interesting. Yeah, he's very definite about not going back. And, that panel was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it.
He said when he was watching Robots after Terence's death that two things occurred to him that he realised that Terence Dix in that story entirely invents Tom Baker's Doctor.
Yeah.
And then the way he writes Tom Baker's Doctor is what Tom Baker does for the next 7 years of his time as the Doctor. And he's talking about how he finds himself unconsciously copying Terence's little tricks of writing. He said he submits that in the whole Doctor Who canon there is no more outlandish plot development than what are we going to do with the nuclear codes? Oh, let's give them to Britain.
Yeah.
And he says that it's an impossible plot device, but Terence deals with it triumphantly by just disguising it with a sensational joke, and you never worry about the plot problem again.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he said that, yeah. Because if you're laughing and you're amused by it, then, yeah, that's the problem dealt with, isn't it?
A few months ago, the superpowers, Russia, America, and China, decided upon a plan to ensure peace. All three powers have hidden atomic missile sites. All three agreed to give details of those sites plus full operation instructions to another neutral country. In the event of trouble, that country could publish everyone's secrets and so cool things down. Well, naturally enough, the only country that could be trusted with such a role was Great Britain.
Well, naturally. I mean, the rest were all foreigners.
Well, exactly.
I also loved his... when he first took over as showrunner, he met Terence Dix and he said to him, did you have any advice for me, Terence?
Yes.
And Terence said, yes, get the decisions made in the morning before they're all drunk.
Yeah.
And Stephen Moffat was like, yeah, I'm not quite sure that's how the BBC's run anymore.
I think what he did that worked so well is that he's doing what you go there for. He's talking about Terence Dix from the point of view of someone who is himself a writer and a script editor. And he's clearly given, you know, he's not just thought about it on the car driving there, he's clearly given a lot of thought over time to the way Terence used to do things. And the show itself, I mean, he's saying that that effectively Terence and Barry, the Doctor changes under the aegis because it's very, very obvious that the War Games was meant to be at the time the last Doctor Who story. How does Doctor Who end? Well, you answer the question, who is the Doctor? So they do answer who he is. And so, again, then the show just keeps carrying on with no reason to be called Doctor Who. And a point he makes is from that point on, he's no longer, you know, a sort of wacky professor who could quite easily be human, apart from he doesn't need to be. Mm. And it's from only from then on that he starts becoming an alien. And that's hugely developed by Terrence himself. I think he pointed out that we see, you know, there's a finite number of stories during that era, or during any era, that Terrence has written himself. But his hands were been so deep in everything else that was happening, particularly during his 5 years as script editor, that he pretty much, along with Barry Letts, creating the post, oh look, I'm a Time Lord, Doctor. And still thinks that the Doctor that writers write today is the Doctor that Terrence created.
Yeah, because that's the first time that we start seeing inside the Doctor's head, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what Stephen Moffat asserted, wasn't it?
Seeing things from the Doctor's point of view.
Mm.
Yeah.
He went on to talk about Terrence's novelisations, didn't he? And he says that one of the problems with the 60s stories, certainly as far as Terrence saw, was that the central heroes of several stories appear to be two rather boring older school teachers, you know, which isn't what kids want to watch. And so when Terrence went back, he fixed it as far as he's concerned when he went back to do the novelisations of that era by putting the Doctor back in the centre of the action. Oh, and one other thing that made me chuckle was I think it came up in the conversation that I think the interviewer suggested that the average fan can be placated, and to which Stephen Moffat replied, I think the expression he can be placated, referring to a Doctor Who fan, is probably wrong, which got a big laugh and round of applause.
And so it was extraordinary. I've often thought I've only ever seen him, of course, on TV and on DVD extras and that, and I've always rather thought, oh, he seems quite, I don't know, slightly ill at ease in front of the camera, but he was entirely the opposite here. He was so at ease, possibly because the whole event wasn't being filmed at all. But he's coming out with stuff like, essentially, at the start, Terry Nation invents how to do a Doctor Who story, full stop, and then along comes Terrence Dix and figures out who the Doctor is, which sounds quite a sweeping and blithe thing to say. But, because when you actually start to think about it, a lot of that's true. He did make a big thing about the whole thing about a bit of a cliche how true it is that he taught so many people to read Terrence. And you see, speaking as a former English teacher himself, he said, you know, the really main thing you need to do is to get children reading, which means, you know, forget Dickens. Just get them reading things they want to read. Once they get into reading, they get onto the good stuff later. And you were saying, you know, and Terrence Dix really writes really good prose. He's very, very good. And he says, given that in his opinion, he invented the character of the Doctor as he is now, because he invented Tom Baker's Doctor for 7 years, and he taught an awful lot of kids reading. What does he say towards the end? He would argue that Terrence Dix is probably the single most important person involved with Doctor Who that has been to the show, which I thought was quite
Yeah, didn't he say the single most important writer?
The single most important person involved with Doctor Who.
To write for the show?
No, to do anything for the show.
Oh, well, okay.
The single most important person involved with Doctor Who, as far as the show is concerned.
Can I just say as well, I think it was really good of Stephen Moffat to appear. He's got his a new TV series that's been out on BBC as well. I mean, he's obviously a busy man. I mean, it's just so unusual to see him outside of, like, the big, big conventions.
Yeah.
Which you have to pay a load of money for tickets for. I mean, I think the tickets for this was something in the region of about £40. Mm. And that's such good value for this day. And everything that was done, like, it was 10 quid for autographs to get stuff signed. It was 10 quid for single photographs. You know, they're not tiny amounts of money, but they're very small compared to... You know, all the money was going to charity, so that's one thing. It wasn't going into the plastic carrier bag of one of the stars and being taken away at the end of the...
Oh, Mark, you're cynic.
Yeah, well, I think that's a report, isn't it, of a certain Doctor Who actor. Yeah, so, but, you know, and you pay a lot of money at these other things just to get... How much must people at some of the bigger conventions pay to get the autograph of somebody like Stephen Moffat, and all to have their photo taken with them, which I actually did because, well, one, the queue was really small. By the time I went downstairs, I was pretty much the last person there, and he was just about to wrap up. And I just thought, well, you know, it's only 10. I'm not going to get a chance again, am I? So, and it was the same lovely company. Is it TTL who did the photographs of me and Polly at Oldbourne with the unit people?
Robin Pritchard and Tricia. Yeah.
Yes, Bessie.
Yeah, so they're really nice people. So I was like, you sod it. I'm going to treat myself because I missed the signing queue, as did we all, because we were doing interviews.
Well, I managed to get Gary Russell's autograph, but unfortunately, my copy of the TV movie arrived a fortnight before the actual event. It said it was like new.
Where did you purchase this from?
Well, it was eBay, actually. Yeah. So yeah. I purchased it from eBay. And when it arrived, it looked like a car had run over it. And then it had been set on fire. Then a cat had mauled it. And it just looked appalling. And I handed it over to Gary Russell. And his face just dropped. And he said he's never seen a book of his in such bad condition before. And he said, well, I hope you enjoyed it. If you could read it after all this. He said, it's like, how many world wars has this survived? And he signed it, and he said in his autograph, he's put, blimey, this has been through the wars, or something like that. And it was great. And then I immediately joined Stephen Moffat's queue, and then I got a phone call from our dear Doc.
You got dragged away from that, I'm sorry, Hayden.
Saying, you are required upstairs because we've got Rob Shearman sitting with us.
Did you get Stephen's interview in the autograph in the end?
Oh, yes, I did.
Oh,
hi. I approached him just...
Oh, did you? What, Stephen Moffat's?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Was it some felt tip on your thigh, Hayden?
It was across my face. I'm surprised you didn't see it.
Well, I saw Glazenby.
It was just after Mark had his picture taken with him. And I said, I'm really sorry to bother you with an autograph, but could you please sign this? Because I missed a chance to... I missed your cue because we were interviewing Rob Shearman and Gary Russell at the time.
Did you think of saying, because at the time we were interviewing and then you had to think, which one's going to impress him more? If I say Rob Shearman, if I say Gary Russell, if I say both at the same time?
Yeah, that's true.
If I say Gary Russell and Rob Shearman doing Terrence Dicks.
What amused me, Hayden, was when you were explaining to Gary Russell about the book. At one point, he said, oh, well, you know, at least it shows it was well-thumbed and looked through a lot. And at this point, you decided to say to him, oh, no, I've never read it. I just bought it on eBay the other week. And his face, he was like, oh. Bless you, your honesty.
I like that Harry Enfield character, Honest John.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've never read it, Gary.
What he must have thought of us after that interview, honestly.
Well, don't bring me into it.
Did your glossy photo of you and Stephen survive the journey home?
Oh, yes, it certainly did. Yeah, it did. And also, they sent you a JPEG of the...
Oh, of course it did, didn't
they? JPEG of it via email as well, so...
As I said, how brilliant the panels were. I don't think we saw another one, did we?
No, we didn't. No, we missed them.
Because we were too busy interviewing people. I mean, obviously... Some of the guests that were there get very easily starstruck when they come across famous podcasters like ourselves. And so we missed acting the part, where we missed Prentice Hancock, Katie Manning and Dan Starkey. The enduring legacy with Paul Cornell, Emma Reeves, Bob Shearman and Joe Lidster. Because we were in a foyer, whatever it's called, interviewing... Because of the malign influence that we have over... So only we know... over Mr. Tony Jordan. He brought along none other than Rob Shearman to our table to talk to us. And it's extraordinary with these things, though. I think we found this with Annika, didn't we? That with a great deal of these interviewees, you think the conversation, oh, I'm not going to ask him, what will the next question be? You'll think, oh, it's going to be a stilted question-answer thing. And so you're sitting at the coffee table or something. It all flows really well, doesn't it? The stuff that Rob Shearman was coming out with. His Terrence Dicks voice rivals our own Terrence Dicks here at the Hooseum.
Robert was very complimentary about the Hoosians, Uncle Terence, though.
We didn't realise he'd actually jumped on the back of the Hoosian limousine, did we? And he kept popping in.
And attended his own celebration.
That's right. I'm not just saying this because he agreed to be interviewed by us.
Robert Sherman?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's like I said, I've seen him interviewed on the, and heard him talking on like the DVD extras on the from years ago and stuff. And he's always seemed like a really nice, really funny guy. And he was that. He was just really affable, wasn't he? I think he sat down and we were chatting for about 10 minutes before we remembered that we were that we were supposed to be interviewing him and we had to do an introduction.
That's right. And then as we were in the middle of talking to him, delightful man, along came Gary Russell, who's really, really mean by contrast, and sat down with us. And it was about a good 15 minutes into that before I got a chance to get a word in edgeways and say, oh, Unfaithful Sisters, this is Gary Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a lot of that talk about Donna Summer for some reason, as far as I can recall. But that's all on a, I mean, that all went on for about an hour or more. We'll put that out as a single podcast, either the next one after this or the one after that, so that this one isn't too long.
Gary Russell was very entertaining. Both of those interviews were great because they were just so conversational,
yeah.
And we were just chatting. And stuff came out about Terence, and then we ended up moving on to a different... And, you know, Gary turned up, and there was a bit of a laugh and a joke with him, and then Paul Cornell appears briefly on the podcast when they came to collect Rob Sherman for his panel. But it was just lovely, and so natural was the conversation that Gary Russell... what did he... Well, I imagine the first thing was because you said that you hadn't read his book, but I think... Didn't get progressively more and more enraged by Hayden.
Well, so I also told him that the 10th Doctor wasn't a popular Doctor for me. It wasn't a good Doctor.
Yeah, that was it.
And then proceeded to start snapping sections of a coffee stirrer that he had on the table.
Oh, yes!
Several coffee stirrers,
by the look of it.
A pile of matchwood at the end that he'd worked his way through in anger.
Enough to fill a tinderbox at the end of the interview. It was... but I think he was doing that all in the name of fun, wasn't he? I mean, it was just for larks, yeah? Yeah?
It was when he poured petrol over them and set them on fire, so I thought we'd maybe go a bit far. We were all... Four of us were in black T-shirts. Hayden, you were in what?
Mine was Sid Barrett.
Mark?
Mine was from the George A. Romero movie, Dawn of the Dead.
And what was Gary's?
Gary was wearing his Stranglers Tour t-shirt from the last tour.
And my black t-shirt was just a plain black t-shirt.
Well, we had Johnny Depp was present with us, wasn't he, during that interview? Mm. And he was wearing the Sisters of Mercy.
Which made me feel even less cool. And then what went on after that? Did we do anything after that? So did we go straight into your little open mic event, Hayden?
No. What we do? I mean, we went back down into the autograph and photo shoots.
That's right. Yes.
Area, and Mark had his picture with Stephen, and I was. I got my book signed by he and Rob Sherman. The one that eluded me, which was unfortunate, was Paul Cornell. I wanted to get Paul Cornell's autograph for the Twice Upon a Time novelisation, which I've just finished reading, actually. Because I am reading the TV movie now. It's just I was reading a Mallory Blackman book at the time when it arrived, and I hadn't had a chance yet.
Dear Hayden, enjoy the book. Sorry, Hayden, what did you say about Mallory Blackman?
I'm reading one of the Noughts and Crosses books. I finished it now, but I was reading Crossfire, the fifth book, at the time, so hadn't had a chance to read it yet. But I read Twice Upon a Time. I was very impressed with it, actually. I really, you know, it marginally improved the episode for me. Yeah, and then was it after that? Then I think that was when Tarek came and met us, wasn't it?
Yes, that was it, yeah.
That's right, yes. Several refreshing... pipes, yes. Into the day he was, wasn't he, by the time he arrived. It's lovely, it's the first time I met him, so that was great. Then we headed downstairs and we caught the end of the Enduring Legacy panel, and Then once that had finished, we moved towards the front, didn't we, for the open mic?
Yes, indeed.
Because Tony Jordan had collared Hayden earlier in the day and said, if you're going to do a bit for the open mic for us, which he asked you to, didn't he? He said, do come and sit in the front row. And so you've been quite nervous about this as well, haven't you, Hayden?
A tiny bit, because again, it linked into the fact I'm so, you know, out of practice of doing this kind of stuff now. Mm. But it was okay. I felt all right. But I was, there were some nerves there.
And also, I mean, because Terence Dix's family were there, Barry Letts's family were there, and so Hayden goes and sits down in the front row. I mean, me and Doc have sat a few rows behind him, and suddenly, as we're sitting there, wait, just before it starts, this figure comes bounding down the stairs past us, and they plonk themselves next to Hayden, and as if Hayden wasn't nervous before it started. Who was it who sat next to you at the front there?
None other than Stefan Moffat.
Oh, we can believe it, could we, Doc?
What we thought was even more surprising when he handed to Hayden a copy of Child Out of Time, Growing Up Without Doctor Who in the Wilderness Years. And could you sign my book, please, Hayden?
Oh, that was amazing. What a moment that was.
I mean, it's a bit of status, isn't it, really, how people get starstruck by seeing celebrities like, you know, famous podcasters. But I suppose Stephen doesn't get the chance to meet with the cognoscenti all the time.
Yeah. And also, he was sat like about 4 feet in front of the very microphone that you're going to have.
Yeah, he was.
Essentially, what they were saying is, can people who've got nice memories of Hayden want to come up to the front and just tell them into the
nice
microphone?
Memories of Hayden?
And, well, when he realised how few people have got those, he said, all right, and then we've got nice memories of Terrence. And so Hayden got up to tell his many times told before on the podcast story about how Uncle Terence got him drunk on cider at a previous Riverside event many years ago. And we were quite impressed by how many people in the audience must be in our listenership, because half the audience just looked at their watches and said, oh, I've heard this, and went out, didn't they?
Oh, no.
Only kidding, of course.
I was going to say, they all sang it along with him.
What actually happened is Hayden then sat back down next to Stephen Moffat. At one point, he just strung his head towards Stephen Moffat and said something. And I was trying to work out, did Stephen not hear, or is Stephen blanking you? Did he reply to you?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. We spoke a little bit while we were sitting there, Are you going to play the audio of the anecdote?
Well, shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go on, might as well. If we hear someone groaning in a Scottish accent, it's like, oh, no. Oh, no.
And 12 years ago, I attended an event actually here, and I went by myself, I think 2021 at the time, I think, and I was really, really, really terrified, because it's, you know, it's a big deal, isn't it, going to a doctor's convention, and you don't really know anybody, and you're meeting all these people who have been sort of like legends, and you've seen their names on the credits, and you've seen the people, obviously the actors who were there, and I thought, so I sort of... Okay, I went out of my comfort zone, and I actually saw Terence sitting in the old bar there, and he was sitting with his family. I thought, I'll go up and say hello. And as soon as I did, he was whisked away to do a panel. So I was kind of standing there, no, I've missed my moment. And then probably about an hour later, I was standing at the bar, and he was actually kind enough to come over and say, oh, so what were you going to say? Basically, what did you want to say? And which then proceeded to me getting really drunk. and Terence bought me a cider or two, actually, which was incredible. Which then led later on to a rather embarrassment where I drunkenly hugged Sylvester McCoy, much to his surprise, I think. So I do apologise, Sylvester. And it was fantastic, because I was just chatting to someone who was, you know, after all those years of building him up as this, you know, typical person and everything, it was just nice to chat to a nice man. And that's very much what he was. And then about... quite a long time later, he was at a castle event, and he was sitting down. I went up to him and I said, oh, you know, you were very kind to me, brought me a cider, and you know, we had a great talk and everything, but I don't remember a word you were saying. So I don't suppose you remember what our conversation was, do you? Or what we were going, and he gave a little laugh. I was like, oh, yes, it made Terence Dix laugh. And that's an enduring memory. And I've hopped this mic long enough now, so thank you very much. Thank you.
And then that was finished off with Terence's three sons came to the microphone, joined by, I think, was it Barry Letts' children?
Oh, but Barry Letts' children spoke.
Yeah, that's right.
First, yeah. Barry Letts' son and daughter, Crispin and Jana Letts.
There's some lovely stuff, didn't they, about how, you know, they weren't just colleagues. They were, the two of them were best friends.
Mm.
And how they were often never happy when they were just having a fish supper together and chatting to each other.
I think that really comes across.
Yes.
From them. I think fandom kind of has always painted a picture of them as being like that. And it was nice to have that sort of image of them as like, you know, bestest buddies reaffirmed for us. Just that talk about if there's a heaven and they're up there now, they'll both be up there talking for a very, very long time.
Whereas I think our listeners can tell that if our podcast ever stops making a profit, we'll never speak to each other again, will we?
Yeah, I'm only here for the Patreon profits.
Terence's sons followed up with some nice memories, but also his youngest son read a poem out. And it got me. God, did it get me.
Yeah. That was a great moment to kind of end on, wasn't it, for the whole thing? It was really moving. It's just a lovely poem, just very simply written with little references that were personal to him and his father. And just, yeah, beautiful, beautiful memories and thoughts. It was very touching.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, how certain things get you when you hit certain points in your life. I think the fact that I'm now at... There you are. He's got to dock now as well, you see. He's thinking about it again now. So touching. The poem was talking more about the little things in life that you like watching Eggheads.
Mm.
But it was the way he wrapped it up as well. It really got to me. I think it's probably because I'm now a father myself. It just sort of home a little bit. And I did turn to Stephen Moffat and I said, that was beautiful, wasn't it? He said, oh, that was great. So he got Stephen's approval as well. And then he said, can you sign this, please, Hayden? And then I said, certainly, Stephen, but any more than five and I'll have to start charging.
And did you say, I'm sorry, Stephen, I've never seen such a battered copy of The Lurking anywhere before. I just got it off eBay yesterday.
No. He admitted that he'd tried setting fire to it himself.
So a lovely day was had by all, in fact. As we were leaving, we got caught up in a conversation between Tony Jordan and Rob Sherman.
Oh, yes. Very funny. Very funny conversation.
Which is a pity that we didn't manage to record this, because Rob's... We were sort of half the time, you know, reassuring ourselves that anyone who didn't understand that our approach to teasing Uncle Terrence was entirely driven by affection, and the rest of the half the time doing impersonations of him. And Rob is extraordinary, isn't he?
Really fun guy. Really fun.
Told a story about how he had no idea that his wife was a childhood friend of Katie Manning's.
Mm.
Came home one day, saw there was a message on the answer phone, pressed play, and heard Katie Manning's voice coming out of the other way.
And then he started boxing up all his Virgin New adventures and stuff. He didn't want her to see because she was coming over for dinner, wasn't she? He didn't want her to see what he had.
What you may hear during the Rod Sherman Gary Russell interview is a lot of banging because Katie walked past us and I took glasses on. Clashing into chairs and tables, didn't she? That's very funny.
She did, yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, certainly we didn't get to see Katie, did we? But that's what happened with these events, you know, and I said this to Rob Sheeran as well. I said, you know, it's just, you get swept up in it and there'll be something which will be great, but it'll mean that you'll miss something else which will equally be great. And I think the event itself, I mean, I haven't spoken to Tony Jordan since the event, but it was an absolute success. It was brilliant.
Really good turnout considering the... Because we had train strikes the day before, which messes up the trains for the next day. Sunday's a bad day for maintenance works on train lines, so a lot of lines are replaced by bus replacement services, which are awful things.
And the London Marathon as well.
And the London Marathon, which just obviously brings in loads of people from all over the country, well, all over the world, really, on that morning.
Yeah.
And the turnout, when we first got there, the first panel, I think, it'd been going for a couple of minutes, hadn't it, but I'd say the place is only about half full in the cinema. But then by the end of the panel, it was like more like 80-90%, I would have said. A really good turnout for the day.
All in all, every penny went to Save the Children and raised a total of around £6,000, apparently.
That's really good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, something I found funny was in April, earlier this year, when we were at Capital 5, Mark, who has spent many capitals smoking on the terrace with Alistair Pearson, Mark was chatting to Alistair, and I said, who we all know can do a phenomenally good Tom Baker voice if he wants to. And I was saying to Mark, go up to him and get him to say, get your phone out, it's on record, and get him to say, in his best Tom Baker voice, don't body it in the river. And I think there were so many people going past, weren't there, in the corridor, that it didn't work so well. No. So Mark, we saw him on Sunday at the riverside, sitting, as he said, with paintings. And Mark went up to say hello, and before he had a chance to say it, what did Alistair say to you, Mark?
Ooh, don't dump bodies into the river. Oh. But he made it sound like Tom Baker saying it.
Given that I forget it most weeks, it's really impressive.
And he even finished it off with that. It's a trap.
So we've got coming up an interview with, or rather a chat between Hayden and friend of the show, Cy Hart, which I think you were originally going to do on site, weren't you, Hayden? And you said, oh, let's do it this week. So you did it yesterday. That's a really good chat, actually.
Thank you.
When you get on to talking about Bond, is he a Bond fan?
Yeah, big Bond fan.
Oh, I felt a little uncomfortable because I don't like getting crumbs in my sheets, you know? You were talking about Shirley eating on the bed.
Oh, brilliant.
I've got it in my notes in bold and in red. Don't forget to say this joke. Because I thought, just in case the podcast isn't going very well.
So, yes, then you two had to go, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just after that, and I ended up sitting in the bar for about 3 hours with the aforementioned friend of the show, Tarek, which, like I say, was the first time I met him, which was very enjoyable. And I also got chatting to Joe Lidster, who's...
Right, you can tell us this.
Playwright, and he's written for Torchwood, Sarah Jane Adventures, loads of big Finnish stuff, I think, and BBC official publications as well. And what a lovely guy he was as well, so that was a real treat. Yeah, I only got to meet him because Tarek is extraordinarily well connected as a Doctor Who fan, although strangely, despite the fact he knows like hundreds and hundreds of Doctor Who alumni, it's all from just random things in his personal life. It's absolutely nothing to do with the TV show.
Which is insane.
Mm.
You see, Hayden, I told you it should be with Tarek we tried to get to replace Mark, but you wouldn't listen, would you?
Oh, I also managed to bump into Tasha Akilios for the first time.
Yes.
6 years as well. So we had a very good chat as well. And she said she's got some pictures of me on stage with Chris.
Aww.
When I interviewed him at the Capitol, the very first Capitol, which would be incredible to see.
Mm.
And she's coming to the Capitol.
She said she's coming to the Capitol.
Yeah.
Next year, yeah, so that'll be good.
Yeah, she's great. She's really friendly and really easy to talk to, isn't she? Really approachable. Yeah.
Fellow guitarist.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
My favourite Terence story is when we all know what a... As much as we liked Tom, how atrocious he could be to work with at times. And they were filming an episode in one of the TV centre studios. And he finally loses his temper, throws the script to the ground. Says, I can't say these things. Terence Dix is a lovely man, but sometimes he writes the most complete And there's an embarrassed pause. And then someone hidden up in the gallery switches on the channel. And through the studio you hear the sound of Terence's unmistakable voice say, oh, thank you very much, Tom. That's very flattering. Right. So, I love that big painting of Terence on the main screen, didn't you?
No, that wasn't a painting. That's a photo app. Just download a photo into it, and it makes it look like a painting. So it's
good, though.
But it did look really good. That was an excellent background. Lovely design thing with the Target logo. You can probably see pictures of that in the show, along with pictures from everywhere else, I guess, including me looking like the photo I took with Stephen Moffat, because I'm trying to look a bit nonchalant. Stephen Moffat's trying to look, you know, bless him, he's no idea who I am, but he's trying to look keen and happy because, you know, it's for charity.
Stephen Moffat's trying to look interested.
And it looks like he's a fan of the show, who's cornered me, and I'm like, well, this is awkward. Sure, you can have a photo, whoever you are.
I told you he was starstruck by us.
Yeah, I think he was. Like I said, I mean, he brought all my books to sign. It was incredible, you know, or get signed. It was...
So here is Hayden chatting with Cy Hart.
I'm here with Cy Hart, who is the founding member of the Maximum Power podcast and co-host of Trap One podcast as well. Hi, Cy, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
No problem. You're basking in the glow of not just the Terence Dixer celebration, but also a celebration of Bond, which I'm incredibly envious of right now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been quite a week for celebrations. It really has.
Oh, my God. He looks as golden as Shirley Eaton on the bed right now. And that's not something I say that often, but there you
Well,
go.
There we go.
But the nostalgia of it all is irradiating through the screen.
Yeah, yeah, it's been an overwhelming nostalgia fest this last few days.
Yeah, because we were going to record this, weren't we, actually after the event. But we have to admit, dear listener, that unfortunately, kind of ran out of time. Because there was so much going on, wasn't there?
Well, exactly. There was it was a really packed day. Plus, catching up with people that you've met and haven't seen for ages and things like that. As events are really starting again, it's a really nice chance to catch up with people you haven't seen for a long time. And that's almost as important as the event itself, really. So, yes, there just wasn't time on the day, sadly. But here we are.
No, absolutely. And if like me, I mean, I've had a 5-year gap. So if you're like me, there's so many people who you spark, oh, hello, how are you doing? And all the rest of it. And also, it's like an unofficial podcast convention, I find, going to these things. Because you get to put names to faces of so many people who you've either heard or you've seen on Twitter sharing their podcasts. And, you know, it is quite amazing.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was like me and you guys who I've known on Twitter for some time. And obviously I've reviewed your book and things like that as well. So, it's just nice to actually meet people that you've talked to online a lot.
Absolutely, and have so much in common with. And one of the things that we had in common, of course, was the love for Terence Dix, I guess, wasn't it? And it was, what did you make of the day as a whole?
I thought it was really lovely. What really surprised me was the turnabout in his reputation, almost. So when I was growing up, his books were routinely badly reviewed. They'd say, oh, we didn't put much effort into this one, it's a basic he said, she said adaptation of the story, we want more. And actually, the turnaround now from the people who were talking on stage and the people that I spoke to during the day, where they're saying, well, now actually the Terence Dix ones were the ones we really loved. And thank goodness I think it was more actually talking about his style and saying how difficult it is to write as simply as he did. And that now that everyone's a bit older, everyone can see that he did something absolutely amazing in those books that no one spotted at the time.
No, absolutely not. I think it was Stephen Moffat on his panel. He said he's probably the first person to really get the character of the Doctor.
Yeah, that was really amazing as well, wasn't it? I'd not really thought of that, but it's absolutely true. He's the one who writes the mission statement for the Doctor in the Doctor Who Monster book that then gets quoted in The Day of the Doctor and stuff like that. And, yeah, Stephen Moffat was right on it with, as we'd expect, intelligent and brilliant analysis of the show.
And there seemed to be a really good... I mean, obviously, as time passes on, you're getting less and less of sort of Terence's contemporaries who are now either available or able to attend these events. But I think there was quite a good spread of people from sort of the show's history, isn't it, really, wasn't there? There were people who worked with him on the show, so like the likes of Katie Manning. Prentice Hancock, of course, was there. And then, of course, you go through to the writers who he's inspired, who are currently writing for the show, but have very recently worked on the show and are now taking on the Target novels, sort of continuing on the tradition.
Yeah, and I really liked hearing from the two editors who worked with him and how they approached their working relationship with him. So Peter Darblevens and Nigel Robinson were really, really interesting from that point of view, both from the Target point of view and the New Adventures, which was, it was really nice to hear about his contribution to them as well.
And he always seemed to be the person to sort of kick off a new range, it felt, didn't it? That's something which occurred to me when I was there, when I thought, well, he was the first person to, well, one of three or four writers, wasn't it, to write the New Adventures. And he was the person who they went to first for the Eighth Doctor Adventures. And he was also the first person to write a novel to tie in with the Sarah Jane Adventures as well.
Yeah, I think he was very much viewed as a safe pair of hands, and you knew you would get something decent from him, and quickly, probably, as well. So, yeah, he's just exactly the kind of person you want to work with.
Yeah, yeah, safe pair of hands, someone who you know what he's going to bring to the table, but every time, especially later on, he started doing things new. Because, of course, we, as Doctor Who fans, it's ingrained into us almost as much as it was back in the day that Doctor has 13 lives, that Terence Dix was writing these almost on a monthly basis, you know? It's that sort of treadmill. But I think when he comes off that treadmill, it's when his style of prose and his flair, I'd say, for world building and also for following the script, but also adding that little bit more, I suppose, character to the story. I guess,
yeah,
that really comes to life, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the story that Peter Darblevens says about the first draft of Exodus coming in and saying, yeah, this is really good, but you've written a Target book. I want you to go away and you need to liven this up, expand it. And Terence said, oh, so you want me to complicate it? And I love doing that. And that's a great story. And someone who knows he's writing on autopilot and someone actually says, no, this isn't what we want. And he's quite happy to go away and sort that out.
I suppose when he's spent an entire career asking others to do that, when it's asked of him, he thinks, right, okay, well, I know what I'm doing.
But yeah, what really came over through the day was how much he was loved by everyone and how no one who'd worked with him had a bad word to say about him. And there wasn't anyone there who said that they knew of anyone who thought badly of him. And that's the mark of a man who's edited people's work, who has redrafted and rewritten scripts, worked with TV people, book people, the whole lot, and he still came across as a lovely but slightly grumpy man.
And that grumpiness lent a sort of endearment to him, didn't it, I think?
I think so.
Yeah. Did you ever meet him? You know,
I met him once at a convention. I think it was Barry Letts' very last convention. So it was the last time the two of them were on stage together. And I was one of the people who went up for an autograph afterwards. And one of the many, many hundreds of people that probably told him in his life that, yeah, you inspired me to read. Because my mum would read me the books when I was really small. Because I started watching Doctor Who when I was 4. So I didn't read the books. But we would have a chapter a night when I was really young, from one of the Target books, and I said I was just desperate to read them on my own. And he said I hear that a lot. I think that was his standard answer, but I think he was really pleased every time he heard that, because what's better than inspiring kids to read? I mean, that's an amazing thing. And I read, when I was young, I read his other novels as well as his Doctor Who ones. So you'd find the Terence Dix section in the library, and then suddenly you'd read all the Doctor Who ones and then think, oh, hang on, there's these other ones by him, and if I'd liked his Doctor Who ones, then I like these as well. So it just seemed natural to keep going, and off you go.
Did you ever have a favourite that you still call back to, or that you've discovered in recent years?
I've read a few recently, so I've been contributing to another Target Book podcast during this year. So I've done a couple of the classics like The Loch Ness Monster and Genesis of the Daleks. But I'm about to do one that was a real favourite when I was growing up. I really loved the book of The Invisible Enemy. And it's not a book that anyone really likes, but I read that again and again and again, borrowed that from the library loads of times. So I don't know what it was about that story that grabbed me, but it did.
That's a really unique answer, actually. I don't think.
Yeah, no one would choose that.
No, that's great. No, that's excellent, because like you said, I mean, someone was like, oh, the Auton invasion.
Yeah.
Or like you said, oh, the Loch Ness Monster. I might have to dig that one out, actually, The Invisible Enemy.
It won't take you long to read, to be honest.
Well, isn't it The Robots of Death, which is only about 70-odd pages long?
Yeah, something like that. It's not a long one.
No, it disappears when it's on the shelf, I seem to recall. It's very, very thin.
But it was interesting hearing Dan Starkey talking about Nightmare of Eden as his favourite book growing up, and how he went back to that one again and again and again.
See, I'm going to be very boring. Mine was The Web of Fear.
Oh, well, I did like that. That was a real favourite as well.
Mm.
And obviously, I know your story of taking the book from school.
So. It led me to Thieve. Maybe that's what I should have said to Terence when I met him. You know, said, actually, yeah, you led me to, you know, stealing from a library.
He might not have approved so much from that.
Maybe you should go put it back, you know, see.
You see?
No, that's wonderful. What other highlights did you have from the day?
I thought the range of guests were really good, and it was an interesting balance of people sort of across the day talking about him in different ways. But I think the absolute highlight was when his sons came on stage right at the end of the day, and it was really moving, and they talked about their dad in such a lovely, warm way, and how they were overwhelmed, I think, by the social media response to his death, and how that was a reassurance for them that they knew he was as loved by us fans as they loved him. And I think Oliver, his son, who read the poem that he'd written about his dad as well, and it was just really, really lovely. And just having them there, I think, sort of made it. And I think, actually, in some ways, the fact that the event was delayed by a couple of years perhaps made it less raw and more easy to celebrate. And if they'd been there a few months after his death, it might have been a bit more difficult for them. But maybe this was actually a good thing that came out of it.
Definitely, because it was originally scheduled for March 2020.
That's right, yeah. It was the week, a few days before we went into lockdown.
And Tony Jordan told us that, Tony Jordan, for the listeners will be well aware, is the organiser of the event, actually said that it was Paul Cornell who had the idea, and Paul Cornell emailed him in late 2019 to set the ball rolling. So
yeah.
It would have been very, very fresh. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And I was sitting there, I told my wife when I got home, I said, after you read that poem out, I was welling up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was really, really powerful. Yeah, that was a great moment, that was. Really, really great moment. Was there anything from any of the panels that surprised you at all?
Oh, again, I think it was Stephen Moffat coming back again with saying how, in the way that the rest of us probably had on the night that Terence died, he sat and he thought, oh, I'll watch a Terence Dick story. So he pulled out the Blu-ray of Robot, and then sort of came at the end and realised that actually Terence Dick's, as well as doing all the other brilliant things in his career, actually invented the character of the Fourth Doctor, because he's fully formed in that story. And you don't think about it, but it's absolutely true. It's the same Doctor as you see all the way through, and you have different emphases through his era, but it's all there in that one story. And just think, yeah, no, we take that story for granted, but actually it's done a lot of the work for the next 7 years.
Yeah, that was a great thing. There was a few things that he said that really made me sort of think, delve into my mind and think, God, he's right about that.
Yeah.
Ooh, and
his observation that the War Games is the natural end of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And then then they exile him to Earth, and basically he's doing all the things that he wasn't allowed to do, but he's getting away with it. Didn't he say something like, oh, I said, it'd be like me being done for thieving, but being allowed to keep what I'd stolen. Stuff like that. He said, this is how ineffectual they are. And then they send him off to do the things that they've told him not to do. Or just murder someone. That would be fine.
Yeah. and don't worry, we'll tell you who we want murdered. Yes. And then you can go and... Yeah, that was a great talk.
He was really funny and witty and clever in the way we know Stephen Moffat is. But just seeing him on stage and seeing him come up with those answers as he goes along is great.
Yeah, unscripted, because he wouldn't have known what Robert Dick was going to ask
no.
him on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible. And I suppose to round this up, I will ask the question that was asked of everyone, I think, at the weekend. That was, what did Terence mean to you?
Wow. It's such a huge question, isn't it? I think I look at my shelves with all my books on it and think, this is the author I've read most in my life, and read and reread, and I'm still listening as the Target audiobooks come out, and I'm still listening to his prose, and think, that's the mark of a pretty decent man, really, isn't it? As a good writer. And every time you see him on one of the Blu-ray features or listen to him on a commentary, and you just hear his voice, and you know, you're going to get the same stories, and it's just he's just always a reassuring presence. And yeah, Doctor Who is a lesser place without him, I think.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Oh, Cy Hart, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much, Hayden.
And now here is Hayden, Mark and myself chatting at the Riverside event with Johnny Dapp. The sound quality will be variable because we were in the middle of a crowded event. And this may well be one of the most surreal interviews come chats that we've ever done. But we think that possibly it conveys some of the energy of the event.
So just introduce you as Johnny Dapp. Just trying to think, which persona should I do here?
John Watson.
Here with Johnny Dapp.
No, it's not. Right, it's Boo.
Barry Dick.
Murray Walker.
Murray Walker. Here we are, Johnny Dapp. Look at him go. He's coming so soon.
3, 2, 1, go, go, go.
Go, Johnny, go.
This is normally your job, so I'm just trying to think. All right, we're here with Johnny Dapp.
Hello.
Long-term listener and friend of this show. And what have you made of the thing so far?
I found it very interesting.
Yeah?
Yes, I was watching Moffat on stage, and that was interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was nodding. I found myself nodding a lot. Yeah, right. Everything was super Moffat.
Bear in mind, I've never been to anything like this before.
Have you not?
No.
This is the very first convention you've ever been to? So.
Not quite the very first. The first one I went to was in Cardiff when I was about 15.
Right, okay.
So if you change the two numbers around, up close to my age now. Say two, maybe.
Yeah, what have been the highlights for you so far?
No, I've enjoyed the panel.
Yeah.
And then they're sort of chatting about how Terence Dick, you know, what he gave to the show and that what his legacy is going to be and stuff like that. And I have to say, he failed me in a way.
Yeah.
I'm not a good reader.
Okay, fair enough.
And it's because I've never really read his books when I was young.
Mm.
Or books when I was young.
Books, full stop.
Books, full stop. I was going to say, but when I do read books, novels, which is my best one, I don't get on with comics at all. I don't get how the words move around the page. Do you see what I mean?
For the listener's discretion, I just opened my mouth in a shocked...
Well, the pictures are lovely, but I can't follow the storyline. So like, what's going on here?
Oh. Literally, or you just...
I don't know. It's not something I get on with. It doesn't feel like... So yeah. I went from Greece on holiday. I read about 4 Doctor Who novels, the new adventure ones. Oh, they were great, but 4 for 10 days, which is quite slow.
I don't know.
That's really good going.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what I could.
As a parent...
I think you're showing off.
As a parent, I've tried to encourage my children to read.
Yeah.
And God, they're very good now. I stand my son, he's just literally novels. So I'm not saying Terence expelled me, but it's just to see why I wasn't introduced early enough to his work.
Anything you failed him?
Possibly, oh right, yeah, okay. Definitely. I didn't become a fan until I was about 14.
Oh, okay.
So
have any of your children read any of these Terence Dicks?
I've read a Terence Dicks for my daughter.
Wow.
And two of them. The Abominable Snowman, because it's the greatest Doctor Who story of all time.
You're nearly there.
No, I am there. Opinionated. And the other one, which was Louise Jameson, Sunmakers.
Oh, interesting.
And she got on better with that one.
Really?
Probably because I can't pronounce the name Padma
Sambhava. Yeah.
And I kept messing. And I was reading it to her while she was still very young. She's probably more 15.
Oh, wow.
But she's not a Doctor Who fan. She's everything Dad likes is boring and everything I like is brilliant.
Right.
Kid's point.
Yeah. Maybe she'll grow up to be an accountant if she likes the Sunmakers.
Well,
that could be something.
I think Matt might have put her off actually because he got thrown over the building at the end.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Put me off.
I'm sure my wife will be delighted when she hears that.
I think we need to look into that story into more depth one day, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, as we're talking now, we've still got the open mic events coming up. So we're very close to the end of the day, aren't we? I think all of the autographs have got.
I was in the interview with Robert Sherman and Gary Russell. Yeah, and that was interesting to sit back and listen. And he starts telling us about the animation, because I love animation.
Mm.
Which is the next step up from comics, if you feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Animation's great.
We'll let that one slide.
It's a story with pigs, isn't there? Now it's moving pigs.
Yeah, but
a natural evolution there.
Very
the
natural, wrong yeah. pictures are moving, though.
Yeah, the wrong. Yeah, we want the ones that are on the page to jump out. Mm.
Never the best ones.
I wasn't going to say to Gary, is it? How much do you ever feel pressure to try and not put all your own stuff and weird ideas into?
I think he was more dumbfounded by some of Doc's admissions, wasn't he? I think we could have added that one to the pile.
Yeah,
well.
Doc made us look, made me and Hayden look like the same ones. So that was really good.
Really cool as well, am I?
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Well, it has to be said, not having the missing episodes is a bit of a strange thing to cope for there.
Maybe just having one. I can see what you mean by maybe just having one.
You mean
one
the Feast of Stevens, by any chance?
Possibly.
Well, machine, I'd go back to some sort of Magna gun, and I'd go back to, is it Graham Strong's house?
Mm.
And I'd wipe all his recordings, we didn't have the audio either.
Oh.
You could just, instead of inventing a Magna gun, you could maybe just nick his tape recorder. But every time he buys a new one, you can just keep going back
and shoot it through his wall and wipe his tape.
Yeah, it wasn't just them though, there's loads of people doing it.
Oh, I'll be busy, aren't I?
Yeah.
I'm going to be the bad guy in the episode of Rosa.
Oh.
But I'll be going around wiping. What are these guns? Gun I made up, Steve. Don't worry, you go back to sleep.
I think the idea behind it is to get
it's quite complicated. It gets quite nasty after a decaf.
I think he's off him to share his chocolate with Gary Russell, but there you go.
What time are we going downstairs?
We have 35 minutes until we need to be down there. But it's well, we're still...
Please.
Yeah. I'm right.
Anything? Sure.
Yeah.
I've got my water, thank
you. Water?
Well, good, yeah.
You can get a glass of tap water, that'd be great.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, it's very much needed at the minute. I mean, we're being smoked out as we were recording this, aren't we? I don't suppose if anyone's noticed, but while we've been recording, there's a small fire over there, and there's a cloud of smoke that's upon us, like the fog of yore.
Making me hungry.
It's almost like something out of a 10-6 novelisation.
It's acrid, isn't it?
It is a little, yeah.
But it has to be said, though, Terrence, that it's not just... The work you do on the telly as well.
Yeah,
that's really fit. I love the purple era.
Mm.
And he was also working on the end of the Troughton era.
Yes, he was.
And I love the Troughton era too.
There's something he says on one of the DVDs is that his first recollection of his involvement with Doctor Who was that on his first day, the memory that stuck out was that they were trying to stop the Yeti sounded like a flushing toilet.
That
I think
spell.
Was the one, wasn't it? I think that's...
I would reckon that might be where we're here then.
Yeah, I'll be...
Probably.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. which is the other great Doctor Who story.
I'll have to...
Next to Nymon. No. Definitely not next to
Nymon. Oh, Nymon's good.
Well, it's fine. Oh,
oh, right.
I don't know why you...
I thought you said it's fine.
Oh,
I was slagging off Nymon, and I thought you said...
I was doing a dot then, I was completely distracted.
Oh, were you? Sorry. No, he hasn't messaged back for me. So do you think that you... What do you think is the sort of endearing and everlasting legacy that
Terrence
has? Enduring legacy.
That was a question they were asking on the...
Yeah.
This morning, yeah.
We'll edit that bit out. I've nicked the question.
Well, you have, haven't you?
I have.
Oh, you
sound clever. I don't want that.
What's Terrence's greatest Doctor Who moment, and what do you think it is? And that's pretty much the same question.
Yeah, but the listeners don't know that.
I've given everything away.
Put the cut back.
I personally think it's just been script editor, because I remember on the DVDs, he's always saying about rewriting stuff.
Mm.
And you can tell that all the way through the Pertwee era, it's the same type of writing, same sort of feel throughout all of it, and it, I reckon it's like, it's Terence and Barry Letts, isn't it?
Dream
sort of obvious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, they were a good team.
Yeah.
Solidly good episodes throughout, and it kept going for such a long time.
Mm.
All the way until the practice started.
Yeah, well, that may not be the opinions of Diddley Dum coming across there, though. We think it was crap long before that.
But there we go.
Well, it's like what Gary Russell was saying. I know, was it Gary? Somebody was saying. He's Moffat, actually. You're bringing the Doctor. Doctor is the main part.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said, Terence said.
Yeah.
So now I'm saying it. It's been third person to say it. That the Doctor's the main person.
Yeah.
And on the practice side, he just so isn't.
No, it's true. It's true. Oh, well. Thanks very much, Johnny. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your company today.
Back at the time, I'm doing
You're doing something, right? Yeah. I can't stop the recording.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, I can. Hang on a minute. Right.
And I think that's mostly it, isn't it?
Yeah.
On its own, it would have been worth it just for that, the revelation of what Stephen Moffat's like.
One-on-one.
I wonder whether this means that if you ever meet Russell T. Davies face-to-face, he turned out to be actually rather shy and diffident and retiring.
I can't imagine.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I have to say, this follows a trend now. I think me and Doc are very similar in that we tend to go along to these things, and we usually keep our own counsel, and we chat with each other. We don't particularly necessarily branch out socially, do we?
No, it's strange, almost since the most recent Capital, hasn't it?
Yeah, and the last Capital was very...
Where suddenly we started realising that the Drass people recognised us.
Yes.
From the looks of shocked horror on their faces.
We became social animals, didn't we? And it's just, we seem to keep meeting. I mean, it helps when you meet people like The Beef, who a lot of British fans will know.
I think he was funny.
Everyone knows Beef. It seems he's the most gregarious person I've ever met, quite possibly.
I didn't meet him.
Oh.
This thing.
But, he's a fan, but he's another lovely guy who's there.
I mean, it's no surprise for us to see people approaching us at these events rather warily. It's now they do it with the intention of actually talking to us.
Yeah, no, it's been really nice. And it was just a really nice atmosphere. It just really felt really easy to go up to people and start talking to them. And people were very open and chatty, you know. Again, I will say all credit to Steve Moffat for staying the whole day when he could have just, you know, jumped in a cab and buggered off home like 3 hours earlier or whatever.
So the whole thing was arranged by both Dwas and the Hoovers, so congratulations to them both.
Mm.
Thanks as ever to them for their generosity and letting us tag along. No, we had a wonderful time.
Yeah, we really did.
Some of our best experiences at conventions.
And also just, what a lovely day for Terence as well. It was great to hear everyone, these people saying such lovely things about him. It was a day, I think, that really did Terence justice, I think.
Hmm. Fitting tribute to him.
It did what it set out to do, and yeah, it was a fitting tribute.
Right, in that case, I think we'll leave it there. Oh, and quite appositely, who's coming down the corridor to say goodbye to us but Uncle Terence himself?
Well, you know, first of all, my ears were burning all weekend. Was I being spoken about quite a lot?
Uncle Terence, I quite often found that when I've been out in London with Tariq Latif, I find myself walking home with loads of empty bottles. What should I do with them?
Don't dump empties into the river.
Oh, okay. No, all right, I won't then. I'll take them to a recycling place instead.
You've got to recycle them, you see.
Uncle Terence. We are starstruck celebrities in the Hammersmith area.
Put away Hayden's book, Stephen Moffat. It's a twat.
See you next time, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye. Time.
You have been listening to the Diddley Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddleydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddleydum. On Twitter at diddly_dumb, or email us at diddlydumbpodcast podcast@yahoo.co.uk.
Diddly dum. The empty space that circles dime. I mean, time, Jesterton.